All right, folks, how are you doing today? Good to have you here. I mean, there's nobody here, but some people are probably going to join us for another edition of Chá Pedagógico. There's my buddy, Rudy Macello. So let me call him just a second. I'm actually
See something new today with the AirPods here. Like, I don't like them, but let's see if it works.
What's up?
Hey,
Oh,
what's
can you
up,
hear
man?
me?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can you?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I think there's something wrong with the connection. Can you hear
I
me?
can hear. Yeah, I do. I can hear it loud and clear. What about you?
Okay, awesome. Yeah, now I can. I'm just testing something. So, those AirPods that come with the cell phone, but I
Okay,
think they suck, man.
you're
I
gonna give me
can't
this.
actually keep them in my ear. So, I don't
You
know.
gotta give
Maybe
me
I'll
the
just take them
feedback for
off.
this These Earbuds later because
But I
I'm
think the
thinking about
connection is
buying.
not great.
So let me try without them. Okay, can you hear me?
Okay, let's see if that's better. Can you hear me okay? All
Yeah,
good?
all good.
Okay, awesome. All
Okay,
right.
so basically I was asking for the feedback for these earbuds later, but I guess I've already got the feedback I wanted.
Dude, I don't know. Do you know? I actually got one of those Chinese phones, right? And they come with the phone, and then I just can't keep them inside my ears. And that's the problem, you know? That's I wear them, but they just can't stay in the ear. So, yeah, they suck. I do have,
Okay.
the other one. So,
It's
yeah.
yeah,
But
but because the thing
I
is,
forgot to charge that one. Yeah.
I was thinking about buying some of these earbuds for myself, but I'm having second
Yeah.
thoughts right now. I don't think this first impression
Dude,
was a
maybe
good
there's
one.
something anatomically wrong with my ears. And then, so you should definitely get yours and then you tell me. So
Okay.
man, what's up? Let
Oh,
me
I'm good, and you?
crack the window open. Let me just show people here. It's very hot and
Oh,
dry in
goodness.
Goiânia. So I'm just
Yeah.
gonna open the window because it's super
Yeah,
hot here.
do that.
So
By the way, today, guys, I'm so sorry. Today I'm not in Campinas. I'm visiting my daughter because today she has just turned 4 months. So I'm not having a mug or
happy
a tea.
birthday.
Yeah. So
It's like
it's a
a
glass full of grape juice. This is not wine, okay, guys? This is grape juice. And
if you were drinking wine, it wouldn't be a problem,
No, but it's grape juice, And hopefully at the end of this
Yeah.
episode, my daughter is going to come here to say hello to everyone.
Awesome,
Yeah.
awesome. So
So everybody will get
send
to know
our
little
love to
Sophia.
little Sophia, man. 4 months, that's a landmark in a person's life, You're reaching that point that if you're not exposed to certain sounds, you know what happens, right?
I know
So
exactly what happens. That's why I've been telling her stories in English every single
yeah.
second. Of course, she lives with her mom here in São Carlos. I live in Campinas, but every single day I talk to my daughter, video chat my daughter actually. And I
Yeah.
talk to her in Portuguese, sometimes in English. I code
Awesome.
switch in the middle of the conversation. And
Yeah.
especially because her mother doesn't understand a single word of English, so English is going to be like
Yeah.
her secret language, like her dad and
Yeah.
daughter's secret language.
That's awesome, dude. That's awesome. But you have to do it more like face to face, I guess, right? I'm not sure it
Yeah,
works very well,
it
but
doesn't
that's the thing. When you're
actually.
there with her, talk to her in English, right?
When I'm here, I don't have a lot of opportunities to actually come here because I have a lot of stuff to do. And but I try my best to be here as much as I can. And yeah,
Yeah.
it's
And
Portuguese,
then
English all the
you
time,
use
songs,
English and
stories,
Portuguese and
English, Portuguese,
whatever,
stories,
Spanish.
songs, and
Yeah.
nursery rhymes and all these things in both Portuguese and English. Sometimes she doesn't
That's
like English,
perfect.
and I'm like, okay, so let's try Portuguese. And she's okay with Portuguese. And she was like, yeah.
Yes.
And sometimes I try Portuguese, and she was like, well, okay, so let's try English. And she's like, oh, all right. So, yeah.
Cool. All
So,
right.
guys,
So, and
before
I have to thank everybody for joining us today, because today is definitely a special episode. Again, it's a special episode.
Yeah, it's always a special episode, man.
Because
we were not going to do this one. I mean, it just came up, right? We were talking and
we had
something before and after.
Yeah, we were actually the whole idea of this episode. Of course, we try our best to have two episodes a month. Sometimes we don't have the time to actually gather information and prepare something really cool for you guys. But this one was like, dude, we have to do some follow-up episode of the webinar that Paul Horror-Jones is going to give on Monday, because this is a lifetime opportunity. It was a great webinar. If you couldn't join us live on Monday, you can watch the recording. It's on Breast Diesel's YouTube channel. So go to YouTube and you can watch the recording. So this is going to be an episode where we're going to try to discuss some of the highlight points of the webinar that Paul Horror-Jones gave on Monday. So I think it's going to be cool. And so if you guys have any
questions. A lot of spoilers ahead, huh?
Yeah. If you haven't watched yet, we're going to have a lot of spoilers. Yeah. Or not. I don't know. Maybe, you know. Or maybe we're going to tease them more, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, when you mentioned that, we normally try to have one episode every month, right? So I think we had
two episodes a month.
So that's what I was thinking. The last one was before, it was actually already in September, right?
Yeah, it was last Sunday.
The warm up. Yeah. So I think maybe we're going to have... maybe three this month, or I don't know. Let's see what happens. Yeah.
Well, you guys,
I'm kind of lost.
let's give it to the people. Okay, guys, so if you're watching us right now, tell us if you really want to have a third episode of Shopping at School. Maybe not next Sunday, but maybe a Sunday after the next one.
Last Sunday.
So you guys, type here and let us know if you really want a third episode.
Exactly.
But, dude, seriously, one of the... I was rewatching the webinar, of course, not just for the preparation for this episode, but also because when we're moderating a webinar, sometimes we lose. We don't have the time to focus on the webinar that much, not as much as we want or as much as we'd like. So I had to rewatch it several times, and something caught my attention throughout the episode. Because again, I'm a linguist, I'm not a neuroscientist, okay? But something really cool came to me, like when we talk about learning, we talk about memory, remembrance.
Yes, yes.
They go hand in hand. We cannot separate these two things. And throughout the whole episode, Professor Paul Horror-Jones mentions learning and memory, these two words, at least 500 times.
Yes. No, actually, he equated, you know, because so this is something very important to mention, right? The early organisms or forms of life, they needed to remember stuff that they were taking in from the environment. And that's learning, because that there's a change in their behavior, like whether they're going to go in this direction or tumble and go backward because they remembered that they got food or something. And then learning has everything to do with memory. As a matter of fact, Eric Kandel said that learning requires attention and memory. If there's no attention, we don't make memory. If we can't remember, then did we learn? Or you know, so
not
that's
at
the
all.
Question. And again, definitely. And like you said, he mentioned it so many times that actually by the end of the webinar, it was, I have to make my students remember stuff. That's how they learn, right?
Exactly.
In a very simplified way, they have to be able to remember stuff, right?
They have to be able to remember stuff. And, of course, we're going to try to break down these topics from the webinar throughout this episode here with you today, guys. But the thing is, there are so many ways we can actually make our students link or connect or try to remember stuff. Also the textbooks, of course, and Danny might ask me, but Rudy, you kind of like demonize textbooks. I don't demonize textbooks. I don't think they're a sin. Okay. There are many textbooks or course books that are very well designed and very well, you know, made and tailored. I'd say tailor-made because they're very well designed. But the thing is, many course books, textbooks, et cetera, they also recycle language in order to make our students actually remember these names. So this is really important. What Paul Jones said is really, really, of course, everything he said is was important. I think the only thing he said that wasn't that important was good morning. That was the very, that was the only thing that he said that was not so important.
No, he's really, you know, like I said, he's a great lecturer, right? He really knows how to engage everyone. And, you know, and then I told him once, it makes it easier on him because he's talking about something so incredibly interesting that, you know, people want to pay attention to what he's saying. Just like when we talk about the brain and stuff like that. But you're right. It's something that I don't think we stop to reflect on what learning actually is. Like, what are the outcomes of learning? What can you see? And I love the fact that he went back millions, hundreds of millions of years ago.
Yeah.
To show this sort of, you know, progressive, like incremental stages of development, like from unicellular organisms until us. And how very simple changes in the way that we interacted with the world, mostly chemical stuff, right? You know, like being able to remember that I have a methyl group so that I ate something and then and being able to locate the place where I found that, that's learning, you know, just because I have an extra molecule of something. Exactly. And then how it developed to, you know, the complex, huge brain that we have nowadays. So it's fascinating to think about that, right?
Yeah, it was really, really awesome. And in the very beginning of the webinar, he mentioned that was basically, I mean, if you guys didn't have the time to watch the entire webinar, if you only watched like the very first 10 minutes, in the very first 10 minutes, he says that actually he talks about the importance of stimuli, because, and again, what I think is important to mention here, when any material mentions stimuli, we're not necessarily talking about a person doing something to get some sort of result. Stimuli is anything that happens to us, anything. Sometimes you have stimuli coming from robots, from mobile phones, from or stove, for example. If you burn your fingers making food, you're getting stimuli from something inanimate.
From the environment, right? It doesn't have food from another person.
Exactly, and this.
Look at Mr. L. Bear. Just a very nice comment. He says he feels like he's with his dudes. You know, like he loves us. Okay.
That's
Thank
us,
you very
man,
much,
Mr.
Man.
Elder.
That's You're us. You are one of the dudes.
Yeah. The wolf pack.
Yes. Awesome.
The wolf pack. Cool. You know, but the thing is, when we are receiving any kind of a stimuli, our neurons are going to be responsible for transporting all the information that stimuli was responsible for giving us. And when it comes to language, because again, I'm a linguist, I'm not a neuroscientist, but as a linguist, we're going to receive some stimuli, okay? And this is stimuli, linguistic stimuli is going to be any kind of communication.
Exactly.
Any kind of communication. And then it can be us providing stimuli or we are getting a stimuli. Any kind of communication, even from inanimate things. If you're at a bus stop and you have a bus sign with the timetable of the bus, you take a look at this bus sign, you take a look at the times, you're interacting with that.
Definitely.
You're receiving some cards. It's a text, exactly. And
it's a different genre, it's good, but it's a text,
Exactly. And then this stimuli is going to provide us some sort of information like, okay, the bus is going to stop here at 10 in the morning. And now it's 9:45 in the morning, for example. So your neurons are going to be responsible for getting this information and transporting throughout our brains, you know?
That's awesome, dude. Yeah.
linguistically speaking, let's suppose that there's some, I don't know, maybe a word on the bus sign that we don't know. We're going to be exposed to that. And then we will try, we're going to get this information, and we will try, as the neuron carries this information throughout our brain, we'll try to find a correspondent for that word that we already know. Or we'll, if we don't find it, we'll try to infer. Like, oh, okay, so I couldn't find a correspondent for that word in my database here in my brain. So I guess I guess the bus will stop here at 10 in the morning, for example.
Yes, definitely. And you know what? I was thinking about how we got to this level of, you know, evolution, let's say. Because what we can do is so amazing that we don't even stop to think about it. Because when Paul Howard Jones was talking about how different organisms interacted with the world, he mentioned very clearly that if you just had a couple of cells, or maybe you had just one cell, you cannot really send a lot of complex information throughout anywhere because you just have one thing. But then once you become a pluricellular organism, like a sponge, then you don't have a central nervous system because then it's a bunch of cells clustered together. So communication doesn't work very well there. But then, and then he starts, you know, he keeps going like there's a clock, and then he gets to the E. coli, right? And the flagella, and then, you know, tumbling when they make a connection, a chemical connection, and then jellyfish. And then there are neurons, and but they're not really centrally organized. I mean, they are all over, spread all over the body of the jellyfish. But then you kind of start having a central hub of communication, right? And then it's going to take a longer time for animals to develop this place where your neurons or your brain cells are so specialized that they form this amazing network that communicates, right? So they're cells that are specific for communication. They send one signal to the other. And we have those. We actually have almost 100 billion of those inside our brains, right? And the way that we transmit things, that we actually interpret the environment, perceive the environment, and send messages through this amazing network is just incredible. That's why we can do the stuff that we are doing right now, right?
Yes, yes. I'd like to say, I need 5 seconds. Just give me 5 seconds, seconds, because there's someone here that wants to say hello.
There she goes. All right, little Sophia. Hello.
Let me remove
my special guest on Shock Pedagógico, guys. Say hello to little Sophia. I think she's enjoying it. Hello.
This is my daughter. I tell about every single episode. So this is Sophia. No, don't cry.
Oh, okay. Don't cry, Sophia. Come on. Well, she got to be a little bit with us. Awesome, man.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah.
This was like
very cool.
This is by far the best episode ever. But the thing is, cool. So go ahead, dude.
Everybody, she's so cute. Look at
Yeah, she looks awesome. Like me. That's why she's cute.
I knew you were gonna say that, man.
But the thing is, I'm sorry, Andre. It's because she has just arrived, and I needed to say.
No.
And now she's smiling at me. Now she's laughing at me.
So think of Sophia, everyone. We were talking about brain development and how. So Sophia actually has more neurons than we do. You know, she was born with a lot more neurons.
Definitely.
And now what's going on in her brain is she's making connections. You know, she's going through what we call the exuberant period, right? And if you go back a couple of hundreds of millions ago, years ago, we don't even have that network, and now we have such an effective network that we are born with a bunch of neurons.
Yeah.
We start making connections, and then we go through a period of neuropruning. So it's like we are kind of, you know, cutting off the trimming the stuff that we don't use, right?
Yeah.
And then we have this amazing network of 86 billion neurons. Each neuron can make thousands of connections, right?
Yes.
It's stimuli. That's, you know, that's how we make connect. We learn from the environment, right?
Exactly, exactly. And still talking about this evolution that got to this neuron box that we call brain.
Yes.
I remember that, I think I can say that every single episode of Shop Pedagogical, we say that our brains work all together when we're learning a language, that we don't have a specific device for a language or a speech or something like that.
Yes.
Every time we learn, every time we're using language, learning language, being exposed
to
languages.
We're always using Chomsky, right?
Yeah, so our brains are like Pinker. Christmas trees, you know, or all lighted up with brain neuron activation, etc. And Professor Paul talks about the frontal lobes. You know,
yes.
The frontal lobes, and please, dude, correct me if I'm wrong, because again, not a neuroscientist, but the frontal lobes.
Let me get Hannibal.
Hannibal, yes. The frontal lobe responsible for reasoning, thinking.
Exactly.
So basically,
higher order thinking skills.
Higher order thinking skills. Now, let's transfer these ideas, how can I call it? Let's transfer this skill to language learning. Or language development. You know, we're not specifically talking about learning a first language, second, third, whatever. We're talking about languages in general here. But when we're speaking, or when we have to speak to say something, we're going to organize our sentences, right? So, or at least we're supposed to do that. Like, I know that there are some people who don't do that, but we're supposed to do that. But anyway, so we have to organize that. And what does that mean? It means that in our brains, we're supposed to have some sort of repertoire. And this repertoire, we have words and all that belong in every word class possible. So we have prepositions, conjunctions, verbs, etc., 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 etc. So then, because we're going to communicate, we're going to select the best word that will combine exactly the way you want, because then at the end, we're going to form a sentence that will carry the meaning that you actually want, or carry the information that you want to transmit. Mm. So if that's not a higher function, higher order function, I don't know what that is.
Yes.
So again, we're not even using just this organization. We're not even using the language part of the brain, because we're organizing the things. We're organizing the words. We're putting them together. We're crafting whatever we're going to say. So we're using our frontal lobes.
Yeah, well, because like you mentioned it, man. Poe says that this is the area that we use for conscious thinking, right? Basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if we are speaking just like we are right now, there's a lot of frontal lobe activity, mm-hmm. especially this portion of the frontal lobe that we call the prefrontal cortex, right?
Yeah.
Which means that we need to have this very advanced, very sophisticated part of the brain developed so that we can carry out a conversation like this. You know, we're thinking, there she is. Yeah. We're putting stuff together, organizing, prioritizing. And for us to get to this level of evolution, right?
Yeah.
Which is amazing, is like how we moved. And then I remember something that Paul said, that there was a time, if you go back to the Australopithecus, for example, or, you know, before the genus Homo, right? So we had Homo habilis, Homo erectus, but before that, we had different types of hominids, right?
Yeah.
They needed to learn how to generalize things, because unlike other animals, we are not very specialized, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're kind of much more adapted to different things that are going on. And then when there was a time, and we probably came from Africa, according to the archaeological records, right?
Yeah.
So there was a time that this new primate, our distant cousin, you know, needed to know how to use the environment to get what they wanted. And then they had to be clever. They had to generalize things. They had to be able to think certain things. And then it started developing. Yeah. Right. So this is when that's what separates us from apes.
Yeah.
Like our closest cousin on that side, right, is the chimpanzee.
Yeah.
And then this is something very cool that Paul said. So chimpanzees, they don't really have a very cooperative type of behavior because they don't produce a very specific neurotransmitter called it's kind of like a hormone.
Yeah.
But if you think about hormones produced in the brain, oxytocin, right?
Oxytocin, yeah.
Oxytocin, right? So they are kind of like hormones, but they are produced in the brain. So we call them neurotransmitters, right? So oxytocin gives us the reward for working together. It's like socially bonding. And then chimpanzees, they are not really able to do that. Like Paul said, they don't like to cooperate very much. They are very aggressive.
Dude, yeah. I guess, I'm thinking right now, I guess there are two guys that have said this several times in... Who are these guys? Oh, wait, it's us. We said that so many times in so many different episodes, you know?
Yeah,
and you know what's cool? You know what's cool? We're not wrong. You know, we're backed up by Paul Howard Jones.
Well, if Paul says, you know, that's the way it goes, that's the way it goes, man. Yeah.
that was really cool.
But like you said, man, we always mention, you know, social interactionism and think about the... how much learning can actually take place because we are able to work together, unlike chimpanzees, for example, because of this stupid little thing called, it's not stupid, but it's just a detail, oxytocin, right?
Yeah.
Because we evolved that, we developed that in our brains, and now we can learn from one another, culturally speaking also, right? So we can actually learn from the people in the community, in our village, right?
Yeah. And it's still getting this reward system that you have just mentioned. And this is another thing that Paul Howard Jones talks about throughout the webinar. It's the reward system, you know. Normally, I think it's normal for babies. And probably my daughter is going to be the same. Her first word is probably going to be mama. You know, probably. It's always mama.
Probably.
In many studies or, you know, whenever you talk to parents, the first word, mama.
Yes.
Why? There are several reasons for that. Okay. I'm going to make a cut here. I'm going to cut something here and I'm going to explore only this part, this excerpt of the study.
Yeah.
Using the reward system. Normally mothers are responsible for what when the baby is born? For giving food, right?
Yeah.
Let's go to a different paragraph now. Period. Let's go to a different paragraph now. In a different paragraph, then we have the bilabial sound. What's the bilabial sound? Well, if we want to produce a bilabial sound, all we got to do is seal our lips and open our mouths. You know, if I seal my lips here and I open my mouth, I'm going to produce a bilabial sound. So it's super easy to produce it. You know, it's super easy.
Exactly.
And it's also the movement that babies make in order to do what? In order to get food. You know, in order to get food, that's the exact movement of the lips. Now, period. Another paragraph now. Let's combine these two paragraphs now. Then the babies are going to be to receive the stimuli of the food/mother, okay,
beer.
And
beer, okay.
Where?
Oh, okay, we sure, when? When?
When?
Are you inviting us?
Okay. please, Anna.
But
please,
you know, Anna is from Argentina, so it's a little bit far.
Yeah.
I do like, what was the name? Quilmes. I think that's the one from Argentina. Quilmes, yeah, exactly.
Oh, bilabial sound. Oh,
yeah.
We're so naive.
beer. Yes. Cool.
Okay.
Awesome.
I hope my daughter's first word is not going to be beer. Please, whiskey, something more refined.
Yeah, something a little more sophisticated.
Yeah. But the thing is, the reward system is going to be activated. Why? Because then the baby is going to understand, or the baby is going to learn that whenever the baby utters that specific sound, mama, the mother is going to play off of what the baby is saying. And whether the baby is going to receive food, normally it's food. And then the baby are going to connect the dots here. Like, okay, so whenever I say mama, I get food. So that's cool. So that's the reward system, you know?
Dude,
that's
the reward system. I have to show the reward system now that you mentioned it.
Go ahead.
Because there is a mechanism of reinforcement right there. And so yesterday I was doing the neuro shot that I drink and talk about stuff about the brain. And then I mentioned that there are a couple of things that we need to want and to seek. So it's a reward seeking behavior so that we can survive, basically. So, and the most elemental is food, right? We need to be able to find food somewhere and drink and sex when we get older, and you know, so because they're part of surviving or, you know, propagating the species, right?
Yeah.
And then what happens in the brain, and I actually created a couple of, you know, special areas here in Hannibal.
What
so
you
have the ventral tegmental area. Yeah, so just a post-it, cool. You know? So I got a post-it and cut them off. So you have the ventral tegmental area that produces a lot of dopamine, projects to the nucleus accumbens. So that's the pleasure center of the brain. And that communicates with the cortex, especially the prefrontal cortex, to tell us, this is good. I like that. I want more. This is important for my survival, right? So this reinforcement mechanism is most probably why babies have such an incredible bond with their caregivers, especially their moms, because they can get food from their moms, right?
Yeah.
And then if you think about, and there's also the social aspect of the whole thing. So we want, like, so again, going back to the chimpanzee and the social brain, they don't have it like we do, right? So we need to be able to, you know, somehow relate to someone, because this someone is going to make sure that we survive. Mm-hmm. And that person is our primary caregiver, and most definitely moms first, because we get fed by our moms, right?
Yes.
And then, and again, the importance of, and this doesn't only, it's not only restricted to this mom or parent daughter relationship. It's also teacher. So if you think about your relationship with your student in the future, especially when they're kids, they want to trust you. They want to feel the oxytocin so that they can, they are willing to learn and they can engage, because, you know, Poe talked about engage, build and consolidate, right?
Yeah.
The only way they are going to engage with you is if there's oxytocin, if they see in you a person they can trust, a person who can provide, you know, some needs, right?
Yes, totally, totally. And now, still talking about the reward system, when we learn that we're going to get some sort of reward whenever we do something, linguistically speaking, of course, whenever we produce or utter something, we're going to receive some sort of reward or benefit, then the whole speech or the whole communication is going to be based on what? Based on this reward, because we expect. So that's shared intention, frontal lobes, and in my case now, the temporal lobe, all together working. Why?
Yes.
So we have the activation of all these. Of course, I'm just mentioning these areas, but
many different areas.
Many different areas. I'm just mentioning these three areas. Why? Well, the frontal lobe, why? Because we're going to be responsible, that area is going to be responsible for organizing the sentence and thinking. So the thinking is, if I say something, I'm going to receive a reward. Then what kind of word combination am I going to craft here so that I can get this reward? So frontal lobe. And then we have the reward system. We have the temporal lobe organizing, finding the meaning, looking yes. for the meaning. Like, okay, exactly. so I cannot use any word. I have to use specific words because then the person that I'm communicating with is going to give me the reward or the reward that I want. So seriously, then the whole communication is going to be based on this. And of course, the whole repertoire considering a baby or considering infants, the whole repertoire is going to be based on this. It's going to be based on the reward system. And they expect, because yes. they will start organizing and crafting their speech based on the reward that they're going to get. And of course, this is going to be evolved, and it's going to be evolved to complex communication. Sometimes I don't like this term,
yeah.
but the elocutionary sentence, the elocutionary sentence is kind of like a sentence that just to inform, something like that. You know, I don't yeah. like that. I don't want to get into this, but just to separate the reward, like, oh, I'm communicating this because I want to get something back. No, when yeah. you give a lecture, for instance, us here, we're not getting yeah. any kind of reward.
Well, we are on the brain level. Yeah, it's good you for know? The brain. You
no,
know?
No, it's really not, cool. It's awesome. I mean, yeah. we are because
but not like
us beer.
An external reward, right?
No, Anna offered us beer, you know? So yeah. that's the reward.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to separate this, so this is going to be evolved. Yeah. We're going to evolve the way we communicate, but basically we're going to build our repertoire having this foundation, this scaffold, yes. the reward system.
And you actually reminded me of something that links with gamification, right? With playing video games, because Paul Howard Jones is actually one of the biggest experts in that area, how we can gamify things so that the brain can learn in a more effective way, because we love games, right? And then games are incredibly rewarding, but maybe not as rewarding for women, for girls, because maybe there's a cultural element of being ashamed or, you know, being told not to play video games because that's a boy's thing and whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's some sort of conflict in the brain, right? So what basically, if we can equate playing a video game to learning a language, for example, for the sake of illustration, You try to get points and you try to advance. You try to get to the next checkpoint. You try to, because that makes your brain feel good because it releases dopamine. And dopamine is the neuromodulator he mentioned that gives us the sensation that we want to do something. It's the I feel like a hormone in the brain or neurotransmitter in the brain, right? And then there are, and this is very interesting, because there are certain things that are culturally, I don't know, they have become a taboo maybe
yeah.
for a particular type of people. Could be, you know, a minority, could be a gender-based thing. It could be, you know, a group, I don't know, refugees. So there is always something that is probably not going to be as rewarding for a specific person because they belong to a group. And then, again, why is that not rewarding? Because of the social thing. We, as part of any group, we want to be accepted by our group because that's actually one of the best ways to guarantee we are going to survive and mm-hmm. our group is going to have our backs, you know? Mm-hmm. So if anything that is exposed to us and we start doing anything that goes against the rules of the group, that's not going to be rewarding for the brain necessarily. Maybe it will be rewarding, but in a very conflicting way that I shouldn't be doing that. And yeah. then cortisol is going to, you know, cut the effects of dopamine, and then it's not going to be as rewarding. So that's why we need to make it a pleasurable activity. That's why engaging. Remember, we were talking, the last thing Paul Howard Jones mentioned has to do with the EBC framework, engage, build, and consolidate. So in order for people to want to learn stuff, they have to be engaged. If they're not engaged because, you know, it's a social taboo or because they are not, I don't know, maybe attracted to the idea, they were not somehow, you know, convinced or persuaded that this is good for them, then probably learning won't be taking place there, you know?
Yes. And Carla just asked us, is that part of behaviorism? Well, I'm not a behaviorist linguist here, okay? I'm a neurocognitive linguist, but of course I've read some behaviorist material. The behaviorist material on linguistics doesn't get into the cognitive aspects or, the cognitive aspects. So basically what the behaviorist material says is what happens in the environment and the stimuli, they focus on the stimuli that the environment is giving. They don't get into, the cognitive aspect of language development. But I believe that the behaviorist material mentions part of what neuroscience and neurocognitive linguistics talks about, because then we talk about what happens
like reinforcement,
in a narrow situation,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. And the consequences in the environment and how the environment is going, the relationship between the brain and the environment. The behaviorists, they just explore the environment aspect of learning.
Perfect,
you know?
Just like you said, I think just to add to what you said, you know, behaviorists are worried about behavior, what they can see, they can observe. They don't care what's going on inside the brain. But you mentioned reward and reinforcement. That's very behavioristic, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about repeating stuff and then doing something to get something that you can see in someone's behavior, that's very behavioristic, I think.
Totally, totally. And, you know, one thing, another important thing that Paul said, still talking about gamification and video games, because his example was that not that many girls play video games because they are not encouraged. That is the most important thing he said in this part of the webinar, of course. Because then we kind of like debunk the idea of, girls don't like video game because their brains or something in there takes place. No, it's not. There's no relationship to the brain. There's no relationship to biology whatsoever. It's based on stimuli, okay? And it's the same
cultural
with the language. We don't, we're not born with a device responsible for the language, you know? It's not in it. We receive stimuli. We're exposed
to the language.
Did you get
that, Chomsky? Pinker? Did you?
Pinker. Oh, now I know for sure that now Pinker is going to sue me.
But they had to go back to their theories and stuff, and they started adding stuff, you know, because it started not making sense anymore.
But the thing is, this is really important because, again, it's not in it. Our brains and the environment are all interconnected, which leads me to something really important called what? Shared or, Paul R. Jones used shared attention. I used joint attention, which is pretty much
it's the same thing,
you know?
Yeah.
And then he mentioned pair activities because it's more rewarding when you have some group work or pair work. It's rewarding. Why? Because it's cool.
Yeah.
It's a teamwork.
Exactly.
It's cool. So great. This is something that Andre is going to explore in a minute.
Definitely.
Okay? Because I don't want to say something ridiculously wrong here. It's not my department.
Don't worry, dude.
But the thing is, if we talk about, or if we explore this joint attention or shared attention, we're going to end up analyzing one of Tomasello's many studies when and Paul Howard Jones also mentions this in a webinar, the action and the speech all together, this combination in front of a baby, that's what's going to make the baby actually develop his or her repertoire. You know, like, remember, I gave this example so many times, you know, put it up here where there's a shelf. And then the baby, for instance,
movement,
my daughter is looking at me. So she's going to listen to me saying, put it up there or put it up here.
Yes.
And she's also going to see me getting, for instance, the glass and putting on the putting it on the top shelf. So this combination and the movement. Shared attention, you know, it's all about movement. And we do have an episode on kinesthetic, you know. So if you didn't watch or listen to that, go to Spotify or YouTube or IGTV, it's there. But this combination and the shared attention that the baby and the adult, for example, this is the combination that's going to make the baby create and develop their repertoire.
Dude, and I just wanted to add to that because Anna mentioned something essential. Language is mechanical, but language is also organic because mechanical gives us the idea that, you know, you put – there are a number – there's a number of inputs on this side, and then there will be a number of outputs on the other side. And it doesn't necessarily happen like that. It's not linear as we would like to be, right? Mm-hmm. But there is a very important connection between language and the reward system and movement and the mirror neuron system. So we know so I'm going to show Hannibal because he's here. So this is the parietal lobe, right? And it's funny
because— Put it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Okay, so, great.
This is the parietal lobe, and Paul Howard Jones, because he's a very good British man, he doesn't pronounce parietal, he says parietal, right? But so this is the parietal lobe, and we know that the junction between the parietal lobe and the frontal lobe, so you have something that we know as the primary or the premotor cortex. So the premotor cortex has to do with movement, right? Mm-hmm. Moving and stuff like that. And we also understand that for you to speak, because, you know, we have, what area do we have near here? Broca's area, right? The mechanics of language and everything. So for you to speak and for you to feel rewarded, there has to be a trigger for action. And when I talk about action, I mean movement, right? Because we are animals, and we are not stuck on the ground like sponges, you know, so we actually developed a body for movement to go get stuff. Yeah. And this tells us something about this moment we're living when kids are just sitting their butts for 5 hours, not moving, trying to learn. That's a bad idea. I know it's like what we have now, but doesn't work very well. So how do you engage students? So you engage students by sharing attention, because when you share attention, whatever the other is doing, how they're moving, their body language is activating your mirror neuron system, which is in the parietal lobe. Actually, the system is in this area related to movement, because, you know, you understand the movement of others by looking at the movement of others, right? And all of the subcortical areas that relate to reward, they are also very highly connected with movement. So dopamine has a role in movement. And we have the cingulate cortex here that has to do with reward, also movement, right? So the ventral tegmental area, the nucleus accumbens, all about movement. So learning requires movement, especially learning languages. Otherwise, we are trying to teach in a very unnatural way, and that's a problem. So if you try to completely remove movement, especially from kids, then something is wrong. You have to rethink what you're doing. They are not going to be engaged because their bodies, our bodies, and especially when we are younger and developing, they were designed for action, for movement.
Yes.
Many of the brain areas relate to movement, because we are animals. We have to go get stuff, you know?
Yes.
The reward-seeking mechanism is about moving.
And not just because we're animals, because we came from a unicellular organism, because the unicellular organism, the E. coli, that's what the E. coli did, you know? Yes. Let's move. Whenever the E. coli tried to get some sort of food, okay, that's not good for me. What did the E. coli do? Okay, it's not good for me here. Let's go to a different place. Movement.
Let's move.
It's not just because we're now a multicellular organism. Although sometimes I feel that we're not that multicellular organisms, but yeah. It's not because we evolved that we have that. It's since when we were a unicellular organism, but we have 10 more minutes. Oh, dear Lord. And okay. So many things that would happen.
Yeah, we talked too much.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention that anyone who's interested in what he said in the last like 10, 15 minutes, like engage, build, consolidate, you can go to a website. So just Science of Learning and then put EBC framework. I don't remember the website. You can also go to my blog because I have one blog post about engage, one about build, one about consolidate, because that's what, you know, for us right now in the classroom or how we are teaching, that's very, very relevant, right? Very, yes. So how do you, like Rudy said, you engage people by sharing attention.
Yes.
Because we have a social organ, the brain, and it's related to movement because we can learn by observing others, right? But also novelty and curiosity, right? And reducing anxiety and fearfulness and stuff like that.
Yes.
Right?
Okay, so 10 more minutes, I promise. We're not going to go beyond the time today, okay, guys? Because it's Sunday, you have more stuff to do.
Instagram doesn't let us anyway, right?
Yeah, Instagram doesn't let us anyway, you know.
Yes.
Another thing that Professor Paul Howard Jones mentioned in his webinar that it's also very extremely interesting. When he talks about math learners, he gave us an example of one of the studies that he brought. I don't remember if it was one of his studies or a different person's study, but he brought a study on math learners. And he said, well, whenever the math learner is learning something new for the very first time, we have an activation, have some certain areas of our brain activated. And the areas that are
in the
related
frontal
to
lobe as well.
Working memory, right?
Right here. Yeah.
And then after practicing, after exposure, after doing it repeatedly, then we're going to start activating the back part of our brains, right?
Exactly.
A little bit. Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, so the parietal lobe. Yeah. So,
thank you. Because guys, if you're listening to us on Spotify later on, you cannot see Hannibal, but the parietal lobe, right? That goes extremely hand in hand with what we are supposed to do in the classroom. Why? When we're teaching some new linguistic feature to our students, we have to drill. Why do we have to drill? Because our students are going to activate the working memory and drill, drill and exposure for several times since last year, because it's been almost a year and a half that we have this show here. So said that.
Long time. Yeah.
That's cool. That's because of you guys. Because
cool. That's good. That's good.
You've been encouraging us. That's the reward. That's the reward system because they.
That's the reward. That's the reward. We are the reward on the set. Yeah.
Yes. We're doing. But the thing is, exposure is key to language development. Because then all those linguistic features that are stored in working memory, if they're not drilled and if they're not repeatedly explored, it's going to remain in the working memory. It's never going to be in the parietal lobe. Perfect. And it's not going to be, now air quotes for the Spotify guys here, automatic. Because once it's not the working memory, it gives us the idea that it's automatic, because if we don't consciously activate that knowledge, it's activated like, oh, what am I doing? Oh my God, you know? So that's why exposure is.
That's it. And there's something very cool. There's a structure in the mid, you cannot really see here, but it would be somewhere in the middle of the brain. It's called striatum or striate body or striate corpus, or there are many different names. And what happens is the first time we are in contact with new information and we use our senses to capture the environmental stimuli, this is going to be stored in our working memory system that is in the frontal lobe. And then there is a connection with the hippocampus that is in the temporal lobe. So you have two hippocampi, both temporal lobes, inside actually medial temporal lobe. And then it has to be rehearsed a couple of times so that it's sent to the parietal lobe for automatization, right? Hmm. So basically what we need to do, like Rudy said, we have to expose our students to new knowledge, reduce the load so it's not too much, so that they actually have space in their working memories, and then send it to the hippocampus, and it's going to be temporarily stored there. And then with practice rehearsing, so drilling, for example, but that doesn't happen on the same day. It actually takes days, weeks, months, and that's the problem. We don't know how many times, right? So there, the idea of spacing, always going back to content, right? Then it's going to be automatic. And if it's automatic, we don't even think about it when we say, like we are speaking English here, we don't really have to consciously remember the words and try to put the stuff together. It comes naturally to us, right? Because they are automatic processes, right? Yes. That's what we want our students to do. And it takes years.
Yes. And one important thing here, when we say drilling and repetition, we're talking about contextualized repetition, okay? And when you mentioned reduce the work, the cognitive load or the information load, it has to be something extremely relevant, meaning that the information must not contain distractions. So if you're teaching, for example, something that came at the top of my mind here, prepositions, okay? Something very simple here that came to me. Prepositions. Don't get attached to other word classes. Why? Because it's not going to be relevant. It's going to be a lot of information that it's not relevant. And then our students are going to be like, okay, so do I need to learn nouns or prepositions?
Yes.
Which one should I focus on first? You know, so no, go straight to the point and be extremely contextualized. And remember, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take
days, weeks,
months, semesters.
Exactly. Yes. And dude, I have to mention before we go, the last part of the framework is consolidate, right? And one of the most important things or activities we do to consolidate knowledge is sleeping. So think about it, because what happens in the brain once you have declarative knowledge, like concepts, like prepositions, you know, like at, in, on, for example. Once you are exposed to that, they become concepts and they are stored in your hippocampus. After, you know, your working memory, they're sent to your hippocampus for temporary storage. What happens when you go to bed and sleep is like your hippocampus is connecting with your cortex, right?
Yeah.
And rehearsing, reproducing that while you're sleeping. And then this needs to take place. This has to happen for a while, and it's impossible for us to tell how long. That's the big problem with neuroscience. We can't give you a formula, like, you know, do it, you know, you have to sleep two nights and then you have it. It depends on many things, right?
Yeah.
But the idea is that it will not be available or readily available from your cortex unless you had a couple of nights of sleep and, you know, unless you are able to access or activate your hippocampus so that you can bring back stuff, right?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have like 2 minutes. Yes.
Yeah, one or two. I just texted Mr. Elbert, how contextualized prepositions. Maybe we can talk to us later, because we're not going to have the time to explore that. Talk to us later because we don't have the time. So guys, thank you so much for joining us today. If you haven't watched the webinar, go to YouTube, Rusty Sills YouTube channel. The whole recording is there. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Andre, thanks, brother.
Thank you very much, man. And I really hope everybody goes to the webinar. Watch the webinar. It's amazing. Always awesome. And especially the EBC part. That's what really matters when we're teaching. First, you engage your student, then you build new knowledge, and then you have to consolidate that into learning so that it's accessible. All right?
Yes.
So thank you very much. And Sophia, thank you very much for joining us. That was awesome. So
I'm going to give her a shout out right now.
All right. Dude, thank you very much. Hannibal says bye.
Bye,
bye, everyone. Have a wonderful Sunday.
You too, brother. Bye.